out, everybody.
What's up, everybody? Yeah. Welcome back to another episode of Lights Out. I'm your host, Austin.
I'm your host, Josh.
And I'm the producer, Daniel.
And welcome to our new Showtime uploads that on Mondays.
Yeah.
This is the first one we're doing on a Monday.
Happy Monday, everybody. If you're listening to us in the car today, we're happy to be with you. This episode's going to make you feel a lot of things.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of very gross activities are going on inside of Utah's most secretive, disturbing polygamous cult, the Kingston Clan or the Order. And
this one sends chills up your spine, because every time, I think, you know, we've talked about cults a lot, and I think we both have a pretty strong interest in cults.
I think most people do.
Yeah, most people
do. I've yet to meet somebody who's like, cults
not interested. Yeah. And I think our interest also stems from our own backgrounds with our religious upbringings too,
right,
which adds a little bit more layer to that cake. But yeah, this one, ugh.
Well, and just polygamy as a whole, I've been fascinated with for a while now. I've watched a lot of content media around polygamy. I've watched all, what is it, like fucking 20 plus seasons of Sister Wives with the Brown family, and that's kind of where I got introduced to it. Then I've watched some of the other polygamy shows.
They have 20 seasons of
that
show?
Yeah.
I did not realize.
Yeah, they've been on TV a long time.
Whoa.
You literally watch their whole family grow up.
That's crazy.
It's wild. And it's really like the best way to get a good view of like what polygamy looks like, what's the good, what's the bad. And when you kind of look at it as a whole, it seems like there's a lot more negatives to polygamy than there is positive at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Especially when you see where a family starts, where a family ends up, and their family is in shambles.
Yeah.
They're not even together anymore. He ended up, now he's just with his last wife, and his others have left him or divorced him. And so he's got very strained relationships with his kids, and it's just, and I think he's got 20 kids or so. I could be wrong, but it's right around there. He's got a lot of kids.
Yeah.
But in the Kingston clan, we're talking hundreds of kids.
Yes. Some members literally have hundreds of children.
30 wives. They took polygamy and just went absolutely insane with it. I mean, there's no other way to describe this. They took this concept and they're like, this is the way that we believe we should live. But we're going to build, the reason why I think it's called the Kingston Clan is because it's the Kingston family, and they literally created a clan of what, it's thousands of people now?
Yeah. Estimated from like 3,500 to like 6,000 people now.
Within the same bloodlines.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of them are all related.
So lots and lots of incest.
Yeah. And like you were saying with polygamy, such a fascinating thing. And there's a part of me that wants to be maybe a little more progressive, being like, you know, I knew some polyamory people, which is not the same thing. Yeah.
It can work, I feel like, with the right people, right
situations.
Right,
because when you start to deconstruct stuff like this with fundamentalist religious cults, it's not this like progressive thing. It's not this free love thing. It's this control thing. It's this, how do I build my empire? It's not really about love or sharing yourself with other people. It's more like, how do we get the men in our society to completely dominate the women and their children?
Yep.
And how can they profit off of it? That's basically what it comes down to.
Yeah. And what makes the Kingston clan even crazier is they are the biggest organized crime family in the state of Utah.
Yeah, yeah. I think a prosecutor said that.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So you have a fundamental polygamous group that is also just worth millions and millions of dollars.
If not a billion.
If not a billion by now.
Yeah. Ton of money in this group.
And they're surprisingly good at hiding what they're doing too. And that's what's wild too, is there's definitely been some raids by the feds, and there's been attempts to take them down, but they are still active today. This is very much a still functioning group that's operating in the Salt Lake City Valley right now.
Yeah.
And there's starting to be more and more ex-members, people leaving the order. And, you know, we'll show you a couple clips from some of their interviews, because I think it's really interesting to hear from ex-members. There's a great YouTube channel, Cults to Consciousness. She does a great job interviewing a lot of people who were in cults of various, different varieties, Scientology to FLDS to the order and things like that. And just, you know, reading about this is one thing, because you're like, come on, this sounds insane. Like, they're really doing this. And this, there's uncles marrying their nieces, 42-year-old uncle marrying his like 14-year-old, 16-year-old niece.
Yeah.
That kind of shit's going on.
Gross.
Still to this day. And it's like, what's going on? How is this even possible? So that's what we're getting into today. And really diving into a little bit of how this came about, you know, what are they, and you know, what's their background? How did they even end up where they are today? And obviously they're still the mainstream LDS, or mainstream is probably not the right term, but the LDS church.
Yeah, yeah.
Which has evolved over the years, and we've definitely talked about in the past in other episodes. And you've still got Warren Jeff's group, the FLDS. That's still operating, I believe they're not growing quite as much as they once were under his leadership, but they still exist. People are still escaping that point in his cult too.
And it's important to note that the Mormon Church has distanced itself and like excommunicated these sects that have grown off of what was once Mormonism.
Yes. Because all these groups have taken concepts from, you know, the LDS Church, and then it's just really they make up everything else.
Yeah. They'll quote, you know, Joseph Smith, Brigham Young, whatever, but it's very distinct from the big Mormon church.
So you ready to get into this?
Let's do it.
Let's go. So to understand where these types of cults come from, we have to briefly go back to the late 1800s, because this is when the U.S. government disincorporated the Mormon church and seized the church's assets because it still practiced polygamy. As the U.S. government was like, nah, that's not going to happen. We're not going to do that. The church president at the time, Wilford Woodruff, feared this would be the end of all Mormon temples. And the U.S. government also threatened to deny Utah statehood, which had been in the works for a long time. So Woodruff officially announced the end of polygamy within Mormonism and threatened to excommunicate anyone who continued to practice it. Polygamy, if you're not familiar, is what Mormons sometimes called plural marriage or celestial marriage. They officially abandoned it in 1890. The government then returned church property, pardoned polygamists, and admitted Utah as a state in 1896. And the last church-sanctioned polygamous marriages were reportedly performed around 1904 due to some pushback within the church. So it's been a long time that they haven't officially allowed plural marriage.
Yeah, well over 100 years.
In response to the change, fundamentalist Mormons splintered from the main sect because they wanted to continue polygamy. They didn't feel like it was fair that they had all of a sudden just abandoned this, you know, this idea that they had long held close.
And many argued First Amendment rights, right?
Yes, exactly. Many were excommunicated, and one group in particular was known as the Kingston Clan, after its founder, Charles W. Kingston. Although it wasn't technically established until a son, Charles Eldon Kingston, who went by Eldon, formed the Cooperative Society under U.S. law. And members have called their group the Order, the Kingston Group, the Davis County Cooperative Society, or DCCS, or the Latter-day Church of Christ, LDCC. On paper, though, it's a quote-unquote financial cooperative, really a financial institution owned and controlled by its members. And to others, I think most of us, this is a cult.
Yeah.
No doubt. Ex-members are coming out saying this is 1,000% a cult. I think we can all agree, and I'm sure you will by the end of this, that this is definitely a cult. But many members were originally Mormon church members or LDS members, and they either left or excommunicated by the LDS church. And early disagreements were mostly over plural marriage. But the Kingston group also disagreed with the church on the law of consecration. This is the church commandment that encouraged or forced its members to contribute money and materials to the church. In LDS, this is tithing, right? It's the practice of giving 1/10 or 10% of your annual income back to God, or in other words, giving it to your church and then ultimately going to the leaders of your church,
right,
who control that money. In 1926, Charles Kingston wrote and preached about how he became disenchanted with the LDS church. He was excommunicated 2 years later and then converted his son Eldon to his new faith along with his two wives, and they began their cooperative in Bountiful, Utah, just north of Salt Lake City. Although Charles disagreed with giving money to the Mormon church, his cult would continue the exact same practice.
So yeah, he's funny, like, how that works out.
Now I see why, when I start my own thing, I need to fund this somehow. Yeah. So how am I going to get that funding?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we'll just adopt the same tithing policy. In early documents, the members dedicated their earnings and possessions to building, you know, the quote, kingdom of God on earth. I feel like we hear this a lot with cults. All the cults are trying to build the kingdom of God here on earth, or prepare for the end, end times.
Yep.
It's always the same
thing. Always. Yeah. Come on. Find me an original cult. Let's spice this up a little bit.
Yeah. It's like everybody's just borrowing everybody else's ideas or hijacking each other's ideas.
Mm-hmm.
The cult's lore says that Eldon Kingston was the one mighty and strong predicted by scripture who, quote, holding the scepter of power in his hand and would set in order the house of God. This is a tall order for somebody.
Yeah. Wow.
He would reportedly go days at a time without eating, convinced it helped provoke things.
I mean, I'm sure it did. After not eating for so long, I think you'd start to hallucinate.
After like 4 hours of not eating, I think I could have some visions too.
Yeah.
Visions of that cheeseburger I'm going to have later tonight. You know?
Oh, yeah. I once fasted for 24 hours just as I kind of wanted to prove it to myself, just as a form of self-discipline and just as a challenge. I didn't hallucinate, but my God, I was starving. I ate really good after that, but it was tough. I can't imagine going 4 days without eating.
And again, part of me thinks it's kind of hard to believe that was he really doing that?
Yeah, come on. He was probably on like a cheating liquid diet. He was sneaking Kool-Aid or whatever.
He's got Snickers bars in there. Yeah. Well, he believed that by the laying on the hands, he could heal his followers from sickness and disease, which we've heard that one before. So now they've got healing powers. They're having visions. Nothing original here.
Yeah.
His most bizarre beliefs involve the occult. When one of his favorite wives died, he missed her so much that he dug her up from the grave and then cut off her index finger, cleaned off the three bones, and carried them with him for the rest of his life.
Not creepy at all.
Because he was like, well, this is a totem that I'll carry. This is her, literally her, and believe that helped keep her spirit with him. But he later died in 1948, but this didn't stop the group from going on. John Ortel Kingston took over, and he became obsessed with eugenics and was known to experiment with incest among his cattle. He then made incest a tenet of the cult's faith, and he ended up having 65 children through incestuous relationships with his half-sisters and nieces. And he's also credited for making the cult very rich by expanding their business empire. As their following grew, they lived under the Communal United Order, or the United Order of Enoch, a collectivist program. And this is a quasi-utopian society proposed by LDS founder Joseph Smith. The concept was named after Enoch, which is described in LDS scripture as a place so virtuous that God would take the entire place into heaven. The group's moniker, the Order, is a reference to the United Order. Although, as you could guess, this community wouldn't be as ideal as its scripture story suggested, right?
Him experimenting with incest with his cattle.
To then take the results of that and implement it amongst
his family. I need to do it with
his family.
These people. Yeah. What? Really weird. And I know that around that time period, kind of the mid-1900s, eugenics was a big concept. Mm-hmm. A bunch of people were buying into it. And it led to some really gross, heinous shit. In 1941, Eldon Kingston, basically the original leader, if you remember, officially filed for recognition with the state of Utah as the Davis County Cooperative Society Incorporated. The idea was for the cooperative to produce goods and services that are used by its members and sold or traded to other cooperatives and to the public. In the late 1950s, the group was investigated by the Davis County Grand Jury. The grand jury was described as, quote, the polygamist hunting Davis County Grand Jury. They felt like they were kind of being oppressed by the local government there. And I mean, they did continuously raid the group between 1935 and 1957. So they were a bit harassed by the government, probably for good reason. By 1977, it became the Latter-day Church of Christ, and most of the cooperative is now based in Salt Lake City with a small presence in Bountiful. Today, there are approximately 3,500 members, like I was saying earlier, but possibly up to 6,000. It's hard to really know, and I think they are a bit secretive about who is exactly in their cult, and they also tend to change last names for incestuous reasons, which we'll get into a bit later, but most are assumed to live in or around Salt Lake City, Utah, and the group has become known for its incestuous polygamy practices, beginning with only four original families. So
yeah,
this has been going on for like 100 years. You can kind of do the math.
Now we have thousands of people.
Yeah, that are all pretty much related at this point.
And it's a lot of young people too.
Yeah.
Lots of babies, lots of kids.
Oh yeah.
Lots of young adults. And the interesting thing about these guys, especially when you compare them to FLDS, is that they don't live on like a compound together.
Right.
They don't all live in like one central area. Mm-hmm. They're all spread out everywhere throughout the Salt Lake Valley, which I thought was kind of interesting and probably helps kind of keep things under wraps a little bit more.
Yeah. And if I feel like it's a way also to keep the feds mm-hmm. out of their properties.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Because if it was really all owned, it's one compound, like owned by one person, I feel like that you just need one warrant.
People probably be out there with binoculars. Yeah, like, what's going on in there?
Yeah.
So especially I feel like that many people too.
Yeah, true. 6,000 people.
Like a town. By,
yeah,
just basically. Like their own town out there.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it's definitely strategic. But ex-members have said that the cult teaches its members to be polite to strangers, but never make friends with outsiders. They only marry other members of the Kingston clan, and many of these members are related to each other, and their bizarre incestuous goal aligns with white supremacy to produce a master race, quote unquote. But we will dive into this a bit later. There's a lot to unpack there, but that is why they are basically incestuous. According to the group, members are allowed to go to public schools and get a college education. They emphasize like, look, you can go and do all these things. How controlling can we really be?
Yeah.
If you have your own house, your own family, you can go wherever, you can be educated wherever you want to. They try to put on this front that they're open to their members doing whatever they want. But the group in 2016, they actually helped start the Vanguard Academy, which is a charter school in West Valley, which is, you know, just another form of control to keep your children within a school system and feed them what you want to feed them.
Well, in this situation, sending them to a public school would be major liability for them, right?
Yeah.
Because they worry about the influence that the public schools would have on their children and the things that they would see. Because it was interesting with even the Brown family and stuff like that, like their outside influences started kind of bleeding in, through the schools and the various places that they lived, that the kids all really, I don't think any of them are going to end up polygamous at all. And not only that, but just a lot of them aren't religious. A lot of them have kind of fallen out of it. So I think they realized that was an issue that they were going to run into, and they're like, well, we have enough kids now too. We could have a whole school. So let's just create a charter school.
Yep.
And funnel everybody through there.
Yeah. Then we could just sell our propaganda straight to the kids and reduce their worldview a little bit.
Which is scary to think that kids are being born into this.
Yeah.
They know nothing other than this.
Yeah. It's sad. And it's believed that many of the high school age children go to school at this charter school. And if any of the children go to public schools and the teachers, maybe they start asking questions about their family, or they might notice signs of abuse, the children are then suspiciously immediately transferred out of the school. So they do a good job at shielding their children and their group from any teachers who are trying to do their job, really.
Yeah. They don't want to be looked into.
Yeah.
Or raise any red flags for any teachers. So they're doing their best to mitigate the risk of law enforcement, potentially getting involved, or, you know, child services, things like that.
Absolutely. Many of the members then end up working for businesses owned by other members of the cooperative. Reportedly, the Kingston clan operates about 450 businesses total. That is a lot. And it's crazy how much they run. They have run a casino, pawn shops, a garbage disposal business, an insurance company, a 300-acre dairy farm, a coal mine, a high-end firearms manufacturer, and a factory that produces lifelike dolls.
Yeah, these guys love their guns.
They really do.
They're manufacturing like military.
Yes, yeah. I think they have not been contracted by the U.S. government, but they are really trying to get.
Yes, they're trying to get government big money contracts. Yeah.
In 2011, the total worth of their businesses was estimated to be around 150 to 300 million. That's a lot. Today, it's been estimated that their business empire is worth as much as $1 billion.
Factoring the businesses, all the real estate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then all the serious money.
All the money. They're basically exploiting their people, yeah, and then they have to pay into the system. So it's just it's a racket is what they're operating. Much of their wealth, though, is believed to be hidden from the IRS. So these are just estimates, the best educated guesses on how much this empire is actually worth. But they avoid using banks, fearing their money will be stolen or investigated. They also avoid police and choose to handle disputes internally. So if that's not a huge red flag, don't call the police. We'll figure this out. The working members are required to pay heavy fees back to the cult, and according to former members, many workers have been exploited, including children. Even if members struggle with their bills, they are still forced to pay to the church. According to an ex-member, it was believed that if members did not pay the cult, they wouldn't get into heaven. Quite a threat. The Kingston Clan
fuck
leaders...
that, dude. I hate when any religious group does that.
Holds that over your head? Yeah, that's insane.
You must give us money.
Yeah, to get into heaven? All right. Can easily smell the scam here. The Kingston Clan leaders claim there is no homelessness within the group, and there are internal programs for those experiencing financial poverty. I do know the Mormon Church itself does have its own welfare system. If you're a member of the Mormon Church and you're really struggling with money, that's kind of what you're paying into almost, and they disperse funds where they see necessary. So I think at least what the Kingston Clan is claiming is that they have their own welfare system. As we get further into this, I'd probably call bullshit that they're really helping out their members, but that's what they claim. Former members who left the group in the 1980s and 1990s alleged that some workers were paid in units or scrip instead of U.S. currency. And this is reportedly an old form of credit used by the Mormon pioneers going way back. The members are also forced to shop only at businesses owned by the clan. Leaders claim that if they didn't sell something, the members just didn't need it. The ex-members also claimed many of their life decisions were made for them by the group, including who they married and where they worked. Some members mentioned an inner circle whose members were entitled to more wives and better jobs. Rebellious teens or disobedient clan wives were often sent to the clan's businesses that required hard labor. Ex-members even called these work camps, and the discipline and hard labor were meant to build the men's character. It seems like a form of abuse, right? And control.
Order is really the right name for this.
There's absolutely an order to this. It sounds diabolical. Teenage boys would work in the order's coal mines and workshops. They worked very long hours and operated heavy machinery in unsafe conditions. Reportedly, a clan leader once forced children to decapitate cows with chainsaws to toughen them up. Other times, children were beaten for minor infractions like not facing the home place and praying three times per day.
What kind of diabolical dad is like, well, been a bad boy today, Jimmy.
Yeah.
There's a chainsaw.
Go cut that cow's head off. Yeah. This is some dark shit. The work and punishment were also intended to make women more easily controlled by their husbands. Many women were told during their marriage that if they obeyed their husband, they would be guaranteed a spot in the celestial kingdom. As you can imagine, this is all about control, but it was also about the exploitation of labor. Ultimately, all the hard work coming from their members and their members' offsprings would make the clan more and more money as time went on. So, as always, you just follow the money, right?
And that's yeah.
kind of helps you understand what's going on here. They exploit their members. They rake in the cash. They live in really fancy houses, and they get to marry as many people as they want because they control who their members marry.
They control virtually every aspect of their members' lives.
Yeah.
All in the name of
God.
God the Father. And your ticket into celestial heaven.
Yeah.
That you hope to be able to get to one day. The other interesting thing I learned too is that I think this is shared amongst other Mormon sects, but there's a number system. Like everybody's numbered. All yeah. the men get a number. And you're fighting for a higher number all the time because it has to do with who's actually going to get into heaven when you die, and women don't get numbers. And then I think somewhat recently they started doing where if, say, you're a man, your number is number 40, that it would then be your first wife would be 40.1. Second wife would be 40.2. So the women are given like decimal points.
They're just extensions
of their husband. Yeah. They do not view women, the men do not view women as anything other than just this property. They're this thing that's there to procreate, and that's it.
Yeah.
And to do all of the, you know, all the chores, the cooking, the cleaning. It's the very traditional gender roles going on here.
Yeah.
Like that's all the women do is, and that's what they're raised to believe they're supposed to do. So
yeah.
kids are raised to believe, I grow up, I listen to whoever my husband is, even if it's my uncle, and I'm going to raise his babies.
Yeah.
And cook and clean and do whatever he tells me to do. And that's literally my purpose.
Yeah.
That's how I get to heaven, which is just so fucked up.
And get pregnant as many times
yes.
as possible
right.
while available.
Yeah. It's just absolutely insane. Beginning in the Great Depression, the cooperative was extremely poor. Many of its members and leaders lived in absolute poverty. They once wore blue clothing with no pockets to reject their possessions and show they couldn't carry anything they owned. Many went bareheaded and barefoot up until the 1940s, and they would even eat moldy food or just straight up food out of the trash. But those days are long gone. In recent years, church leaders have used their members' money to buy extravagant homes for themselves. For example, clan leader John Daniel Kingston owns a $4 million estate. In 2016, his estate was raided, although we're not really sure why. I'm sure something financial related.
It has to be. That's my best guess.
Another mansion and several other Kingston properties were also raided in 2019, and we'll show some pictures of this, but this is gorgeous homes in Salt Lake's best neighborhoods is where you find the Kingston clan leaders.
Yeah.
The men.
I mean, this house has a turret on it. It has
the
gate, around the front.
Reportedly, one of the reasons I think they have these big extravagant estates is because they hide a lot of their wealth inside of these clan's members' homes.
Yeah.
Basements, filing cabinets. I'm sure they have safes and all sorts of
100%.
other things in there.
This $4 million mansion, I mean, they probably have one of those like mega bank vaults.
Yeah,
basement,
totally.
You know?
Like a big safe room.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Where they keep like 40 firearms and like a bunch of gold bars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, apparently like $80,000 in silver. Another home reportedly had $5 million in gold coins at one point.
Insane.
So they're storing it in a lot of different ways. They're not just carrying all this cash around. They're somehow moving that cash into these rare metals or precious metals and other things. And guns. I don't know what they're doing.
Who knows?
Or trading it for stuff. Who even?
Right.
It's pretty wild. But the suspects were former members of the cult because reportedly the hidden wealth is a poorly kept secret within the Kingston clan. And according to ex-members, the group also exploits the government assistance as much as they can. And they call this bleeding the beast because they're like, fuck the federal government.
Yeah.
They owe us. So they just encourage all their members to take as much as they possibly can because part of it's like they're pissed at the federal government for, you know, banning polygamy. You know, it's kind of
right.
the way like they are not for the kingdom of God. So fuck them.
Yeah.
Bleed them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they encourage everybody get as much money from the government as you possibly can. Although they've refuted this, of course, and they say, oh, we're self-sufficient and self-sustaining. And Maybe the top, maybe the leaders don't.
Yeah.
Participate in welfare because they can't.
They don't need to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But this has been confirmed by X members. They for sure tell you to do this. Yeah. This is like very well known, the bleeding the beast concept.
Yeah.
So for years, members would receive welfare for their children when they claimed they didn't know who the father was. The scheme was later exposed in the 1980s, and the Klan was forced to pay more than $200,000 in fines for welfare fraud. John Daniel Kingston, along with his two brothers, Paul Eldon Kingston and David Ortell Kingston, currently run the Klan. Paul is known to be the highest ranking and has over 300 children. That is so absurd.
Can you conceptualize having 300 children?
I can barely conceptualize three children.
I can barely conceptualize just like knowing and being close to 300 people total.
I can't even think of 300 names.
In your life, too. Like right, your entire lifespan.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
I mean, you don't have a relationship with...
How is that possible?
98% of those kids. It's impossible. You don't have enough time in the day.
Yeah.
And so, but they're not doing it for the right... You know, he's not doing it for the right reasons.
Right.
He's not having children because he's this loving father who wants to... I have so much love to give. I can give all this love and attention to 300 children. No, that's nothing to do with that.
If Nick Cannon can't remember 12 of his kids' names, there's no way you could even remember 300 of your kids'
Absolutely
names.
Not.
Yeah.
Paul's daughter, Nicole, wrote a book called The Leader's Daughter, where she detailed the physical and sexual abuse within the cult. Her sister was nearly beaten to death just for crying. Paul's brothers have faced serious criminal charges and allegations of their own. David was imprisoned in the late 90s for incest with his underage niece, or John's daughter, who was forced to become his 15th wife. He was convicted of third-degree felony incest and unlawful sexual contact with a minor, and he only served 4 years in prison.
Gross.
Yes.
Not only gross of what he did, disgusting that he only served 4 years in prison for this.
He was not paroled, by the way.
Yeah.
The state just terminated his sentence entirely.
Disgusting.
So it's like, it's very obvious these guys have some political control
protection.
Yeah. They've definitely funded some people into the politics there. There's just no way.
Yep.
John Daniel Kingston, David's brother and fellow Klan leader, was accused of taking his 16-year-old daughter out to a family ranch and beating her with a belt when she tried to flee the marriage.
Yeah.
So there's lots of that going on. It's just rampant throughout this whole group. He later pleaded no contest to reduce charges of third-degree child abuse and was ordered to serve 28 weeks in jail, pay $2,700 in fines, and ordered to complete an anger management program. Yeah, real serious punishments here for these guys.
And this to clarify, this 16-year-old, that's the same one we were talking about who was sexually abused. So it was John's daughter, and that it makes David her uncle. So she's then... forced into this marriage, sexually abused, and then when she tried to flee, her dad beat her. Good God. These are the Klan leaders.
Yeah. And these are just a handful of allegations involving crime within the cult. And the Kingston Klan has outlasted a slew of charges, investigations, lawsuits, and of course, many, many allegations over the decades. They somehow are able to just... skirt around stuff. I don't know how they're doing it.
Even when they're convicted, it's like it doesn't even matter.
Which is why they probably have been so successful and just keep on moving.
Yeah.
In more recent years, the Kingston Klan has come under heavy public scrutiny. Ex-members have become more vocal about what's really going on behind closed doors. So we'll dive into some of the more controversial and disturbing ideologies and practices that have come to light in recent decades. One ex-member said, quote, "I could boil down what they're about in three words. Money, sex, and power. They'll do what they need to do to defend what's theirs." And ex-members have said, this is absolutely about sex. And there's lots of polygamists who be like, it's not sex. It's not about sex. Huh?
Yeah.
Right. For these guys, it is 100% about sex, money, and power.
Yeah.
No doubt.
The only reason we really know so much about the inner workings of the Kingston Klan is from ex-members who chose to leave for one reason or another. Some have been public about their escape and the horrors of incest and abuse within the order. John Joseph Robinson, who went by Joe, is a former Kingston Family Clan member. He spoke to Vice back in 2016. He said his father, clan leader John Daniel Kingston, who was the one who owned the $4 million home and beat his 16-year-old daughter, had 14 wives. Joe was one of 13 siblings on his mother's side and 157 siblings on his father's side. As we've mentioned, many of the marriages within the clan are incestuous. Uncles have married nieces, half-brothers have married half-sisters, and even Joe's mother and father were half-siblings who shared the same father. Many of the women choose new last names after their weddings so that prosecutors struggle identifying family relations within these polygamous marriages. The Kingston men often track their wives' ovulation cycles to know when to have sex with them, so they could procreate very efficiently. And since some of them have so many wives, they actually have to schedule to have sex throughout their day-to-day work schedules.
Probably multiple times a day,
too. Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is crazy. Isn't that That's insane? What I've never understood, too. I'm like, the amount of sex that these guys gotta have is insane.
Yeah.
And how? How do they even physically do that?
Yeah, it's like, oh, my lunch break. I have to go meet my
17th wife. I got Sally at noon, you know, Deborah at 4.
Yeah.
It's just...
It's ridiculous.
How do they run this business empire? They all are fucking the entire day.
Right.
What is going on?
They're just, yeah. Maybe they just have, they're just exploiting the workers so much, their own members, that it's like they don't really work that much. I don't know. But when Joe was only 10, he had to undergo a blood test to determine which extended family member he could marry in the future. He underwent another blood test before that, but couldn't remember how old he was when that happened. Apparently, the group performs these blood tests to try and avoid complications from inbreeding, but we will come back to this a bit later. This is a big part of this cult, are these blood tests. Joe wasn't the only one to be disturbed by all the incest. Priscilla Tucker, a former Kingston Clan member, was pressured to marry her first cousin within the order. They told her they wanted to, quote, keep the bloodline pure. She knew this was when she had to leave, so she did.
Good for her, man.
Yeah. Historically, though, this was nothing new. Here are a few examples that have been exposed to the public. So, prepare yourselves. Jason Kingston impregnated his half-sister, Andrea Johnson, in 1992. She later died during childbirth. It's believed that medical care was avoided to conceal this incestuous relationship. Jeremy Kingston married Luann Kingston, his cousin and aunt, also his fourth wife, in 1994. Their relationship began when he was 24 and she was only 15. He was only sentenced to 1 year in prison. Not to mention David Kingston, who we mentioned earlier, who married his 16-year-old niece, and a slew of allegations and lawsuits have been filed against the group and its members for sexual abuse and forcing minors to marry their adult family members. So you might be thinking, what is with this obsession with incest and keeping the bloodline, quote unquote, pure? Jessica Kingston, a former member featured on A&E's series Escaping Polygamy, remembered an odd moment when she was 12. Her Sunday school teacher came into class with a bucket of clear water and a vial of black food coloring. The teacher added a drop of dye to the water, and she said, quote, you can never get that out. That is always there now. She then went on to talk about how you can't associate with black people or anybody of a different race. Jessica said that she, the other children, and the adults in the Kingston clan all casually dropped racial slurs in their everyday conversations. One ex-member admitted they didn't even know one of the most offensive slurs was bad until they were 16 years old. That's how common it was. The nonprofit Southern Poverty Law Center has designated the Kingston Clan as a hate group under the category of general hate. According to the fundamentalist cult, black people supposedly suffered from multiple scriptural curses. This included the mark of Cain and Noah's curse on Ham in the Old Testament and the racist beliefs of early Mormonism that have since been renounced or abandoned by the mainstream Mormon church. And I think the Mormon church itself, even the bigger Mormon church, didn't allow black people into their church until like the 80s or something. So there is some deep, deep racist structural roots that even stem from the Mormon church, let alone the offshoots that are more fundamentalist. The Kingston Clan prides itself on its white purity. According to Jessica, the cult believed that black blood was, quote, the worst thing you can have. A former member characterized the group as, quote, 10 times more racist than your average white supremacist.
Wow, that's not a statement you want to have.
No, that is very damning. A previous Klan leader, Ortel Kingston, taught that Adolf Hitler had the right idea about creating a master race, but didn't have the Lord's help, so that's why he failed. So the Klan believes their bloodline is pure because they are all direct descendants of Jesus Christ himself. This claim doesn't even make sense because Jesus was from Nazareth in ancient Judea, meaning he was not white. And Jesus was not married nor had children according to historical accounts. But you know what? This logic doesn't really matter for cultists. They believe Jesus came down from heaven, had multiple wives, and had children on earth to create a race of quote unquote chosen people.
So they just made it up.
Yeah.
They've just made this shit up as they go along.
Yeah.
It's and very obvious.
If you didn't really hate this cult already, I think this is like you really start to realize that these are villainous people.
Just evil. Running this. They're just evil people who are just brainwashing people and using their faith against them. The amount of spiritual assault going on here and trauma happening within this group is insane. I mean, it's just a whole other level because you're being told, like, in order to not go to hell, you've got to do these things. You've got to believe these things wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
And if you're born into this and you know nothing else than this, that's scary.
Yeah. They're feeding you this racism from a very young age.
Yeah.
And in your day-to-day life, you're not really, I mean, Salt Lake City is a lot of white people to begin with, let alone this community. It's all white people. It's also all your cousins and half-sisters.
Yeah, it's just a big family. Yeah.
Yeah. So they just make this outsider group and they make you afraid of other people, essentially.
And according to former members, the Kingstons have forced incest on their members to keep this bloodline pure. Very pure is.
Yeah, yeah. Better sure. Quotes.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like, have you ever seen the Black Klansman Spike Lee movie?
Oh, no.
It's great because the one guy, the white supremacist, who's all about like purity is like, if you watch the movie, I won't spoil it, but it's the punchline is like, this guy's all hung up on purity when he's like the dumbest guy in the group. He might be a product of incest himself and like he's just dumb as rocks.
But he's pure.
Yeah, but he's the purest one.
Right. Yeah. And of course, they've rejected and condemned any non-whites. And not to mention, they're also homophobic. Surprise, surprise. Some ex-members admitted to searching for gay males to assault and send to the hospital, which is just fucked up. This is like a thing that teenage Kingston Clan members do. They go out and bully and beat up queer kids. It's fucked up. Others who have come out to their families or been caught were sometimes given ultimatums. The order sees homosexuality as a choice, but if they stay in the closet, the cult will keep them as workers.
Of course they will. They'll exploit them if they stay in the closet.
Like, we need your good hard work.
Yeah.
But just keep gay shit in the closet, all right? I don't want to see that. According to a former member in their doomsday prophecies, the cult also believed that gay people would be, quote, the first to go. And they also believe that soy can turn a man gay. Where'd they get that from?
Dude, supposedly that was like a common conception back then, a homophobic conception that you know how like soy boys is now a thing with their, it's like, oh no, the estrogen. And have you heard that theory, which is proposed by a lot of kind of douchebags.
Really smart individuals.
Yeah. So it kind of stems from this idea that soy could turn you gay. These people are just stupid.
When literally, like, how many foods have soy in it?
So many.
It has to do with the, it's a suggestion that soy could lower testosterone levels due to phytoestrogens.
That's it.
But that study has been debunked and more robust studies have been done on it. And if we really want to get into the weeds of this, beer has more of an effect on testosterone than tofu does. So, you know, I'm just going to leave that there.
Suck it.
Beer's good, man. I need my beer.
In reality, nothing's going to do it. It's just, it's a stupid anti-gay fucking slur.
Yeah.
You like true. Soy milk?
No.
I actually don't like soy milk. I don't either. I'm an oat milk guy.
Yeah. I like almond milk. I like almond milk.
Yeah. But I do like soy, man. It's good.
Nah, we need that pure dairy milk. We drink that pure dairy milk. Get those bones.
Raw.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
We feed our cows the soy. Yeah.
Bunch of dummies.
Just like, I always wonder with these leaders, how do they believe this shit? Do they actually believe this shit?
I feel like you would have to, or at some point they just like convince themselves of all these things and it's kind of just a I don't know.
They've created the world that they're now living in.
Yeah. And it's like, how can I shatter this?
Yeah.
Keep up the illusion.
I think they believe it after a certain point. I mean,
well, to be able to convince people, I think you'd have to.
Yeah.
To this point.
Yeah.
And really, truly live it.
And like you said before, these are just evil people.
Yeah.
So they have evil beliefs. They've
conveniently aligned their beliefs to line up with their wickedness.
Yeah. And
seems like this has been taken over. This is a devil cult.
Yeah.
There's nothing godly about this.
Yeah, this is real.
Straight from the pits of hell here.
I think even the devil would spit at incest.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Like, it's like, this is too far.
Nah. No. Yeah, this is, they definitely have taken it to a whole other level. Because, yeah, you don't oftentimes see a lot of incest with cults. We've covered a lot of cults, and I don't think incest has been brought up in any of them. These guys
typically are not,
No. Very important here.
Most cults want the outsiders. They want to convince more people so they can grow. But their tactic here is just we'll grow our cult from the inside.
At whatever cost.
Have a million kids, and that's how we'll grow.
Yeah.
It's like, do they know the scientific facts behind incest and studies and what happens?
Yeah,
there's a reason.
Right.
Then they won't do this.
We'll get in the blood test a little bit later, but yeah, that's their way of like, oh no, we can figure this out. We can, we can avoid.
God wants us to do this because this is ultimately all for God. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, this is all for God. We're preparing ourselves. The end times are here. Everybody, the end times are here.
I want the end times to be here when I read this shit.
Yeah, it's like,
shut it down.
Let's stop. We don't need more kids born out of incest. Like, we don't need this. It's not good. Ex-members have mentioned a church prophecy called End of the World War, or the White Horse Prophecy. And this is an apocalyptic vision that involves a violent race war, where the black race attempts to destroy the white race. But the Native Americans came to save the white people.
What?
Dude, what? These guys are also doing drugs. You have to be. Like, what on earth?
That's so ridiculous.
The prophecy declared the Kingston clan as the winners chosen by God to rule the world for 1,000 years. That's a world I don't want to be in.
Yeah.
Please take me out. According to them, the world will inevitably end in nuclear war, and the 144,000 would be saved by God, according to their interpretation of the Book of Revelation, which, again, this is a widespread belief amongst lots of other denominations out there, but one clan leader believed that the plant, a wildflower comfrey, would protect them from nuclear war.
Yep.
The flower. Yes. And of course, it's all allegations. We can't say this is 100% true because the Kingston clan has denied that it encourages racism and homophobia, or is doing anything illegal, anything gross whatsoever. In response to allegations made by previous members, Kent Johnson, a spokesman for the cult, claimed that the order's foundational principles, and I say this in quotes, include the golden rule, love thy neighbor as thyself, or treat others as the way they want to be treated, blah-de-blah-de-blah. They don't believe that at all. On paper, the church rejects any form of racism or bigotry. Kent Johnson defended the cult, claiming their businesses hired various racial and ethnic minorities. He also claimed one of the earliest members of their cult was even a Native American.
Dude, doesn't this come off as like, I can't be racist, bro. I have a black friend. Isn't that like how it's like, no, we had one We had one Native American member. And
where do you think we got
them.
The casino from?
Yeah, right. Yeah,
it's probably some dumb shit like
it
that.
It absolutely is that type of shit. And the fact that it's like, no, we've hired them before.
You're exploiting all of your workers.
Yeah. It doesn't, That's, you're not making your argument here. It's so stupid.
Yeah. What, how much philanthropy have they done? Where's those, that at?
Yeah. Not, none.
Just zero. To the world. None.
Zero.
On top of this, Mr. Johnson claimed that the cult was a true victim of prejudice and harassment by the mainstream Mormon church, saying that the Kingston group was targeted because it was too progressive.
We're the victims is what they start to say. Oh my God.
We're just pushing the limits here, guys. We're just progressing humanity forward in the right direction. Well, why did they consider themselves progressive?
Polygamy.
Yeah.
That's the reason. Yeah. And which is why they claim they're being discriminated against by the mainstream Mormon population. It's very interesting that they all live in like the same place too.
Yeah.
They cohabitate, you know. It's very curious what like LDS, I'm sure LDS leaders are just like, they're out of sight, out of mind, like they're, but I wonder if they really think they're truly evil. They must think that they're truly, but why wouldn't the LDS church try to shut that down? You know, try harder to shut it down. Maybe they can't, they don't have a way, but I'm like, they're pretty powerful.
True. I mean, it seems, I don't know how much they could do at the end of the day. I think this is up for the, I mean, the government has to intervene with this. I feel like they've already been excommunicated. That's how their this cult even started, was that their members were initially excommunicated because they were practicing polygamy. I think that's like all you can really do as a church is like, we're condemning this behavior and you're excommunicated. So it's like, I don't know how much more they're supposed to do at the end of the day.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I need to go to Salt Lake and really try to infiltrate this.
Knock on the temple door.
Yeah, I need to see this for myself. Dude,
they'll see your tattoos and they'll execute you on the spot.
Damn. Be like, I'm interested in joining.
Yeah.
What do I got to do?
Yeah. The one cool thing about the Mormon church is you learn a lot of language. They have these language teaching programs because since they send all their missionaries all over the world, they want to teach their missionaries different languages.
Right.
So you really can, if you want to learn a different language, just go be a Mormon missionary and get sent.
They'll teach you.
Yeah. You'll learn Spanish in a heartbeat if you need to go to Mexico or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, anyways, back to Joe Robinson here, the son of the church leader, John Daniel Kingston. So his mom in 2013 had become very sick from colon cancer, which is absolutely terrible. Her husband, John, though, convinced her to try an alternative treatment that he thought could work. And you're hearing this, you know exactly how this ends. So instead of doing conventional treatment, he's like, let's just try this alternative treatment. Because the group generally avoids hospitals at all costs, as they believe government-backed doctors might inject them with a disease or demand birth records, which would expose their incest and underage sexual abuse. Early leaders were obsessed with homeopathic treatments and herbal remedies. Followers were told that through a proper diet, they could, quote, live to the age of a tree.
I think that's where the flower protecting from a nuclear Armageddon comes from. There was a previous leader of theirs who was like really into herbal remedies. Thought that kind of the...
Yeah, that makes sense.
It could
protect
you from certain things like that.
Which we all, you know, no hate against herbal remedies. We all love them.
Sure.
We all use them. But...
not when you have colon cancer.
Yeah, though. Like when you have something like colon cancer, it might be good to take a look at like what modern science might have to offer at least.
Right.
Weigh your options.
Yeah.
Rather than just completely deny having a... somebody who literally studies and specializes in colon cancer, take a look at your situation.
Right.
After being denied proper treatment, Joe's mother got even more sick and eventually passed away. The group's leaders then seized all of her belongings and told her son Joe that if he wanted anything of hers, he'd have to buy it back from the clan.
It's just some penny pinchers.
Because the clan owns everything, including your belongings.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they would sell it through KSL classified ads. They just be like, open it up to anybody in the clan.
Sell it off.
The only thing Joe bought was a silver bell that his mother used to ring when she was sick and needed help. Just a horrible,
really sad,
horribly sad. Early on, Joe had taken an interest in magic, especially sleight of hand. The more he learned about sleight of hand and deception, the more educated himself about it, and the more he questioned the order in his own faith. The death of his mother also obviously added a lot of thoughts to his doubts. He's like, this is all very weird. Potentially, my mother could have gotten some treatment and help that might have prolonged her life. On May 6, 2015, his father, John, told Joe to pack his things by the next day and figure out where he was going to live. If Joe were to leave the order, he knew he would never be able to contact any family or friends who were still in the order, so they completely cut you off. He thought his father was possibly just threatening him, but Joe ended up leaving anyway. And Julie Robinson, Joe's oldest sister and former Kings and Clan member, opened her home to Joe after he left. At 16 years old, Julie had married the group leader's firstborn son, and she was her husband's seventh wife, and she ended up having 9 kids of her own. And can we just say, like, I mean, for the women, there's no redeeming qualities here. There's just nothing good here. I think the only thing that is positive is they have, you know, the relationship they have with their children.
Sure.
The wives are much closer to the children than the father is, obviously.
Sure, yeah. But no, they're treated as second-class citizens.
Just like your concept of love and what a loving relationship is just so
thrown out the window. Yeah, you're just meant for reproduction. That's it.
Just the trauma from that alone is just hard to wrap your head around. But in the group, she was required to have a baby every year. That is crazy. So there's moms that are having 10 kids, a kid a year. Boom, 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 boom. It's just, I mean, pregnancy alone is just such a hard, hard thing. And then to have to do it all naturally, that you're just forced to. You just have to have a natural birth. You do it at home. They rarely would let women go to the hospital, maybe in extreme cases. But there is even stories of women that had a stillborn at home.
Yeah, yep.
And they still weren't even allowed to go to the hospital.
This Julie's story is like
crazy.
This, yeah.
Julie was also pressured to, quote unquote, stay skinny, pay the bills, and keep up her household by herself. But most importantly, she was required to reproduce. Over the years, she had several miscarriages. Some resulted in life-threatening complications, including a missed miscarriage where her body wouldn't expel the pregnancy tissue. Her stomach swelled and she got an infection. And the order gave her what she called a magic tea to make her have the baby. She drank multiple teas, but her body still did not pass the pregnancy tissue. Meanwhile, her husband was too busy to attend to her, and one day when her husband got home, she tried to call a doctor, but her husband jumped on her and began attacking her. And this was the moment Julie realized that something was seriously wrong with the order. Luckily, she was able to see a doctor and resolve her medical issue, and in 2009, she left the order and her husband, but took her children with her. According to Julie, her father hit her so hard he dislocated her jaw, but she still managed to escape. She eventually married another man, Jared, and she started her own daycare out of her new home while also raising her own children. After her brother Joe left in 2016, he stayed with Julie, but his father kept in contact with him and even tried to convince him to return to the Kingston clan. Just,
yeah, it's the worst.
Pure evil shit here.
Yeah.
Really no other way to describe it. I mean, just horrible, horrible abuse.
Yeah. Many who leave the cult are not prepared to enter the world at large. Many struggle to find a support system and even turn to drugs as a way of coping. Because these familiar doctrines, rituals, community, and traditions are often very comforting to those within the group. It's just very familiar. It's something you go through. It's a routine that you constantly go through. But after you leave, obviously all those routines, all the familiarity is completely gone. Christine Marie Kettes, a cult survivor and an advocate for ex-polygamists, founded Voices for Dignity, which is an organization that helps survivors of religious abuse, polygamy, and human trafficking. She said, quote, "When people leave a cult, they have an enormous wound because everything that's familiar to them is in their group. And another thing that the public doesn't realize is that there are also beautiful things within those communities. We have to be careful not to do one size fits all, just because there are many, many bad things that are in that lifestyle and in that group, that there's nothing good to pull people like Joe to come back." I think this is really important to remember, that as disgusting and horrific as these cults can get, for a lot of people, this is all they know for their members. You're born into this. Your whole family is attached to it. All your friends.
Siblings and
yeah, yeah,
aunts, uncles.
Literally your whole family is tied to this. Unless if Joe, you know, he did have his older sister who he knew was on the outside. But really, I mean, it's basically everybody you know. And everything, not only everybody, but everything that you know is really tied to this community. And I know even with, not even with cults, but just religion in general, I think that's a big reason why people don't want to leave. I know, you know, I've asked certain people, even who were a part of the Mormon church, if your family did not, would not accept you if you were to leave, would you have still left? And the one person I was talking to said no. Like if their parents were to have disowned them for leaving, they would have just stayed. So I think that's a big draw for a lot of people in religion or anything. It's just to stay a part of that community for, I mean, multiple reasons, but I think a lot of it has to do with your family connections.
It's your entire social circle.
It's everything, yeah.
Especially for the Kingston group because they work together, they worship together, yep. They eat, live together.
Yeah, you might even go to school together because mm-hmm. they have that charter school now. Joe, like many who try to leave the group, was conflicted after he left the order, since almost, you know, like I was saying, all of his friends and family were there. Joe later met up with his father at the order's church headquarters to discuss whether or not he should return. His father was very friendly and asked if he was lonely, which I think is a bit manipulative. Joe confessed that he was, obviously. His father then offered for him to return to the group, but under certain conditions. He would have to work wherever his father told him to and basically follow every command that he gave him. He would also have to pay a fee to the group, ranging anywhere from $2,000 to $5,000. However much it would end up being, Joe couldn't argue. He would just have to pay it, no questions asked.
It's like a membership fee.
Right, yeah. And you know that's it's like punishment too, right? It's like, oh, you left and you want to return now? Well, we're going to make this a monetary punishment for you. To maybe reconsider if you ever want to try to do this, something like this again.
Which he already doesn't have a lot of money as it is.
Right.
He already left with virtually nothing. So right. Now I got to pay this to get back in or pay off this debt.
Yep.
Way to just trap you.
Yep.
Right.
After meeting with his father, Joe took some time to decide. He admittedly still couldn't accept the group's beliefs, so he wouldn't return. But he also admitted that a small part of him wanted to return to the group when he saw his father. Luckily, Joe never returned, and he's reportedly still an ex-member of the Kingston clan. He went to college and has pursued sleight of hand magic as a career, which he has practiced for over a decade. He has been featured in several news broadcasts and podcasts, talking about his experiences within the cult and readjusting to his own independence beyond the order. Here's actually a clip of Joe talking about blood testing with Amanda Ray, and Amanda Ray is kind of a YouTube personality because she's also a big Kingston Clan ex-member who escaped.
Yeah, she's great too, yeah. By the way. She's got her own YouTube channel and she's in a bunch. She was interviewed by the Cults to Consciousness channel.
Oh, nice. Okay.
She has a one specifically going into the incest. Like they talk about the incest part of it for like an hour. It's really interesting.
Damn. Yeah, if you're more interested in learning about this cult, her channel is definitely a great resource.
But I asked him before this, I was like, are you okay with talking about the incest? Because
yeah, absolutely.
It's been such a topic that outsiders are asking and they have all these weird questions thinking that like, oh, well, don't you see deformities? Don't you da da da? And I did see sometimes in the order I saw like kids were born with missing ears and things like that. But it was kind of rare to really like see anything.
Right.
You and I feel like a lot of the people are like attractive. It's not like you're going to be some... You know?
Well, I feel like it's like the first generation, you kind of get away with it. If you keep
with
going.
The incest?
Yeah, if you keep going, it gets worse. So it's like, don't get too comfortable.
But do you think that it's partially because of the blood testing?
Oh, yeah. And they do have blood tests. Like everyone gets their blood tested. And
did?
Yeah, I did.
Tell your story because I didn't get blood tested.
You didn't get blood tested?
That I remember.
Really?
But I'm also, my mom and my dad, I don't think are related at all. So maybe they didn't feel like they needed to with me.
Probably. Yeah. I remember like I was just at my mom's house. Everyone lined up, got their blood tested and then they left. Like it was just, and they're like, why are you doing this? So we can see who you can marry.
They were just open about it?
Yeah, they're just open. They're like, because it's like, because they say like, hey, if, you know, certain people get married, they saw like different traits. So like, they try to avoid it. Yeah,
that's true. I did notice it was happening in my family too, where some things, because it's too many generations of incest and you're not testing. There's more common genetics because it's on both sides of the parents, right?
Right.
So how old were you when they blood tested you?
I remember it was twice in my life.
Twice?
Twice. One when I was like very young and then one when I was like 10. Like, I remember it was like one time at the old house. I'm like, did they lose the blood test? I don't know.
Maybe.
But I was always curious. I was like, I want to know, like, am I O positive or O negative? Like, like people would talk about it. I'm like, what am I? I never figured it out. I had to go figure it out myself.
Wow.
But they figured it out, so.
But yeah, there's Joe. Seems to be doing all right. Here's a secret I have. I'm a sucker for sleight of hand magic.
Dude, same.
Sometimes, like, if I'm up late at night, I can't sleep. I'll just pull up some sleight of hand magic videos. I think
I'm a fan of all magic.
Yeah,
everything. I'll watch any of it. Yeah, illusions, any of it. I love it all.
Nice. I specifically like sleight of hand because that takes tremendous training and talent and practice to get really good at it. And I hope there's some videos of Joe out there doing some sleight of hand because it's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder what they thought of that. Yeah. I wonder what their policies are on like magic or like, can you read Harry Potter?
Yeah, true.
If they have anything. I think the LDS church is nay on that probably.
Yes. I know they're pretty strict on even their just media in general that you can consume. And they even for a long time, I don't know if they still do. They had their own movie industry. They produced their own Mormon movies that are like acceptable.
Some major blockbuster hits, I'm sure.
Yeah, I've actually watched one and it was really hilarious.
Oh
yeah.
Man.
It's the funniest shit ever. But yeah, they're very odd, but it's a way of kind of controlling the media that their members consume and just making it appropriate. But and on a more serious note, they were talking about blood testing and the incest. So we obviously, most of us know there are a lot of complications when it comes to incest, inbreeding, whatever you want to call it. Babies born of incest are at increased risk of suffering congenital disabilities, developmental delays, and genetic disorders such as blindness, hearing loss, neonatal diabetes, and limb malformations. The group flags what they call sexual unions with the highest risk of birth defects, according to court documents, by having all order children's blood tested, cataloged, and kept in a large database. Although Amanda claimed really she didn't see many birth defects during her time in the cult, many have been reported through the years. Some children in the Kingston clan, dating back decades, were born blind. Others were missing fingernails or had undersized heads. Others had albinism, dwarfism, or were even born without genitals. One baby who was deemed by the group to have too many deformities was allegedly put in a shoebox and left to die. Many pregnancies have resulted in miscarriages and stillborns. Legends even suggest that countless dead children and pregnancy tissue have been buried on Kingston property in mass graves. This is just a legend, but I mean, you could kind of see why this, like, would become a legend, because they're so obsessed with reproduction. So much could go wrong. And it even, the fact that Amanda wasn't seeing a lot of birth defects raises the question on like what actually happened to some of these children.
Yeah, that'd be really shocking to know the reality behind that.
Right.
If each of the women are potentially having a child every year, or that's what they're pushing for,
right?
You know, out of all multi-thousand members, you know, that's a lot of children, and a lot of potential pregnancies with issues. That's scary to think about, that there could be this whole other sort of dark side to this.
Really, or dark,
which seems very plausible. It's like, how they blood test, but do they have anybody that actually knows how to interpret these blood tests? Like, what's the level of knowledge and understanding? How are they actually figuring this out?
Gross. But These reproductive complications have not stopped the Kingston clan from rampant, incestuous polygamous marriages. As one former member put it, quote, to build a superhuman, if you have four or five defects to get one good one, it's worth it, because that one is going to be genius level purity, and that's what the order is looking for. Obviously, this ex-member wasn't really, he was more speaking on behalf of the ideology, not he didn't believe that they were going to create a superhuman, just to clarify. That's more like what they believe, which is why they don't really care about the congenital defects or deformities, because they're just really looking for that one really pure outcome out of however many.
So seems like a lot of trial and error happening here. So what's really going on? But throughout the years, fundamentalist Mormons have argued that polygamy is protected by the First Amendment and that the U.S. Constitution allows them to live according to the teachings of their faith. 2013, polygamous family, fundamentalists for a long time, the Browns won a first-of-a-kind ruling. The Browns were famous for their Sister Wives reality TV show. I've watched all of it. I'm caught up completely on it. Honestly, it's a very fascinating show, and I think there's you see a lot of good. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of good throughout over the years. Their kids seem really good. They're all, for the most part, doing well, although one of them did take their own life not that long ago. And I think someone argued that they're actually doing well because a lot of them don't have a relationship with Cody anymore. Mm-hmm. It's a whole situation going on there, but they were a part of the church for a while, kind of like a FLDS church for a little while, but then they broke off of it and then kind of weren't really a part of any church for a number of years. They just kind of did their own thing, and they did their own like church service for a while, but then as the years went on, they kind of were just this kind of mainstream polygamous family. Like, they were religious, but they weren't attending any church or anything like that. They were just kind of like living in their own sort of little bubble.
It's more about the polygamy than the faith.
You didn't really hear much about the faith anymore. And I know there's some people out there that have zero connection to faith whatsoever. There's another show called Seeking Sister Wife, and I've seen this show too. This is on TLC. But this shows not different Mormon families that are like pursuing the polygamous life. So they're like early in the process. There's one family that actually lives here in Colorado that's on the show, and that's one guy, and he has three sister wives basically. And then there's two couples from Colorado on it.
Wow.
Yeah, there's another couple of another guy. He lives up in the mountains.
Of course he does.
And he's married. He has kids with this woman, but he's like trying to get a sister wife because he said the Lord it's kind of comical, but it's fucked up at the same time, because I feel so bad for the wives, because this is clearly a him thing. He said God came to him and said he wants him to be a polygamist. And so what he's doing is he's going online and dating all these Colombian women online.
Good.
And then the show like shows him going to Colombia, meeting up with these women, and he's like sleeping with these women and stuff like that. And it's all in the name of like finding a sister wife.
Yeah.
But then claiming like, no, this isn't about sex. This is about like
about
our
God.
Religious journey.
Yeah.
So I think that's how most people view polygamy, is like, come on.
Yeah.
Guy wants multiple wives. What for?
Right. Right.
If anybody's been in a long-term relationship or is married, you know, like, it's hard being in a relationship, you know, it can be hard. It's, you know, it's not an easy thing. So to have multiple of those.
Yeah. This guy just wants to be a freak.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it's hiding behind
the scapegoat
whole religion.
God. Yeah. God told me, man.
We want an open relationship where their partners can't go out and find other partners.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
what it is. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
And that's what bothers me, because in this show, the poor wife's face is just clearly in pain, watching her husband flirting with this young Colombian girl who's like interested in being a sister wife. They can't even communicate.
Oh my God.
They're talking through a cell phone Google Translate to each other.
Oh my God.
It's just so fucked up because she's clearly in pain. Their relationship's on the rocks. And it's like watching him find her, his replacement for her. It's just fucked. And it's all in the name of polygamy. But anyways, Cody Brown, he was legally married to his first wife, Mary. They had children, or he had one child with her, and then he had three other wives. But Cody was originally married to Mary. Then he ended up getting married to Janelle, Christine, and then Robin. So at one time, he had four sister wives and that he was married to, but it was married under like religious law. They were spiritually married.
Yeah.
But the Utah government has consistently turned a blind eye to polygamy for years, and many pro-polygamists have compared their circumstances to the gay community and the right to the same-sex marriage.
Which is a load of horseshit. Yeah,
like,
absolute load of horseshit.
Come on, man.
These are not the same things. Stop trying to piggyback off of that.
But in 2016, polygamy was recriminalized in Utah and is technically a third-degree felony with a punishment up to 5 years in prison. But still, the Utah government said it wouldn't go looking for a polygamist to prosecute. Utah federal solicitor Parker Douglas said, quote, "It is a crime under the Utah bigamy statute for someone who's legally married to one person to cohabitate with others who are not their legal spouse or purport to be married to them." He also explained, "To think it's just a matter of consenting adults is ignorant and naive as to how polygamy is sometimes practiced in Utah. I grew up in California. I understand the draw of the simple, aren't we all consenting adults here? But when you get into the weeds of what consent means in many of these relationships, it's a much more sophisticated and complex question, especially when you throw in abuse that can happen over generations."
I couldn't say it any better myself. Yeah. Right there. Because you want to think like, oh, it's just we're all consenting. It's all just we're sharing love here. But we know when we get into the weeds about it, it gets much darker.
Yep. Parker also believed the majority of people living in a polyamorous or polygamous relationships probably did not abuse their children or their partners, but said that many do. He specifically pointed to the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, FLDS, led by imprisoned child rapist Warren Jeffs. But many argue that abuse happens in monogamy as well as polygamy.
True. That's fair.
Other critics argue that it's impossible for a father who has dozens or hundreds of children to be emotionally invested in his own children individually. I think it's hard to argue against
that. Yeah, I don't think you can argue against that. And before people come at me about like, oh, we're being closed-minded or something about this, I've read all the polyamorous literature. I read Sex at Dawn. I read, what's the other big one? The Ethical Slut. I get it. I get polyamory. But that's not exactly what we're talking about here. I think because in these circumstances, it's polygamy, but you don't see one woman marrying 500 men.
Yeah.
It's always the men who get to marry all the women they want as a form of control. And we see, okay, this guy has 300 children. Like we were saying, we can't even comprehend really that many children, let alone being invested in them to any degree where they feel like they have a father, which I think is critical for a lot of things.
Yeah, it's forced systemically instead of being like an open choice.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
And I think these wives would probably agree.
Yeah,
it's honestly, not only the kids losing out on any sort of like meaningful relationship, but the wives are partner. As well.
Yeah.
Like you're not getting what a wife would get in any other type of relationship. Yeah. Oftentimes. Are there like anomalies out there? Sure.
Yeah.
There's another, I've watched a lot of polygamy shit. There's another polygamy show out there.
Josh, what are you trying to say?
They actually, maybe I'm interested. No, absolutely not. We joke all the time. Kendall's like, absolutely could never do that. I'd be fighting these other.
Right.
I wouldn't want to do that either. Like, that's just a lot of, it's just so much like responsibility and so much attention you got to give to people.
No, when I had some polyamorous friends, they had Excel spreadsheets on like their date nights with whom and what time and where at. I'm like, dude, this feels like a second job. This is way too much work, man.
Yeah. But there was another polygamous show where we were blown away. We were like, wow, this guy's actually doing it right. And maybe it was just for TV, but this guy had four wives and they were all happy with him. They all seemed like they had no issues. They all got along. They all lived together as well in one house.
How many children were involved?
There was still a decent amount of children. I don't think there wasn't like 20 children or anything. It was more manageable between four or five parents. It was I don't know, it was like 12 children or something like that. I think they each only had like two or three maybe. But he was actually like attentive to them and they spent all the time together. They all lived together. Because that was the interesting thing too about the Brown family is their family seemingly was doing pretty well when they all lived in close proximity to each other. They never lived in, well, they lived in one house initially kind of when the kids were young, but then they eventually lived in separate houses, but they were always close to each other. And one time they lived in Vegas and they literally owned a cul-de-sac. It was like each wife had a house in a cul-de-sac and Cody would just like run from door, like house to house to, you know, stay with each of the wives. But then they moved to Flagstaff, Arizona and things just fucking fell apart and the pandemic hit, which made this type of lifestyle, especially when you don't live together, very difficult because all of his wives lived like 15 to 20 minutes away from each other. And then he got really concerned with the pandemic and everything. And so things really fell apart from there because he wasn't spending equal time with all of them. And then relationships went south after that. So I feel like under the circumstances of you're never holding some, like you're not forcing someone to be there. Like everybody should have the right to leave and exit whenever they want to. All the women should be able to do that. He should be able, like, it should just be a mutual understanding and also providing the kid, every child with what they need, the attention and resources that they need. But I think it's very difficult. I think it's easier said than done. Can it be done? Sure. There's, like I said, anomalies out there, but I think for the, for a good majority, especially in circumstances like this, where it's, you know, religion's also tied into it, I think it's very difficult. But for the Kingston group, they're like, we don't care about politics. We don't really listen to that.
I don't care about the law.
I own the politicians here.
Yeah.
The recriminalization of polygamy didn't matter to them. They have continued plural marriage with their family members, and some will admit to only having one wife, but having children with other women as a cover. So they're just like, paper, they're just very sneaky and just kind of like working the system for sure.
And have been for a long
they've
time.
They've mastered it, really. They've been at it for a long time.
In September 2022, 10 women who were members of the Kingston group denounced the cult in a court of law, and they filed a 136-page complaint, and they named nearly 50 defendants, including at least 14 members of the Kingston family. They cited forced incestuous relationships, indoctrination, subjection to physical abuse, child labor, slave-like working conditions, and schemes to defraud the state. I don't really appreciate the term slave-like working conditions. That's what was kind of included in all this, but moving on. One of the alleged victims in the lawsuit, Blakelyn, was 16 years old when she was forced to marry her cousin, Travis, in 2020, who was 11 years older than her. She immediately became pregnant afterward. The marriage had been arranged so that Blakelyn could continue the, you know, pure Kingston blood and obey her husband. A separate lawsuit had also been filed in 2022 outlining similar allegations of sexual abuse and trafficking. Ex-members allege that the cult would get young girls pregnant so they wouldn't leave the group, another form of sick control. They would also specifically target girls who would resist the cult's rules, so also as almost a form of punishment. Ex-members allege they were forced to marry close relatives who would beat and rape them. Others fled before the order could lock them into similar marriages. The 10 women in the lawsuit alleged that the Kingston group trafficked women and children for decades while acting under the pretense of a religious community. And the 10 women, from their earliest memories until their eventual escapes, were victims of economic and sexual crimes perpetrated by the order, a criminal enterprise and polygamous religious sect, is what their lawsuit said. Of the 10 women, at least four appeared to be closely related to one of the sect's leaders, Paul Eldon Kingston. They also listed the 450 businesses that the sect operated. One of them, Standard Restaurant Supply, had already been cited by the federal government the previous year for violating child labor laws. The complaint also stated, quote, almost all were denied an ordinary education, physically abused or threatened with abuse, taught to fear outsiders, and forced to work for years of their childhoods, often in grueling jobs with little or no pay. The group obviously has denied these allegations, calling them, quote, frivolous and unfounded. They accused the plaintiffs of being paid to engage in the lawsuit, and they said, quote, we don't expect any of the claims to prevail in a court of law. We appreciate the sensitive nature of allegations of sexual assault and encourage anyone who is experiencing abuse to seek help from the authorities immediately. Highly doubt it. Alongside this, four members of the Kingston family, including Jacob and Isaiah Kingston, were sent to prison in 2023 for a $1 billion tax fraud scheme that one Internal Revenue Service investigator called, quote, one of the most egregious examples of tax fraud in U.S. history. They attempted to exploit the biofuel tax credit program to steal $1 billion and then launder it. They, quote, claimed both EPA Renewable Fuel Standards, RFS, program credits and IRS tax credits for biodiesel fuel that did not exist. The Kingston family members who were involved received anywhere from 6 to 18 years each, and the fifth individual, reportedly not a Kingston group member, received 40 years in prison.
Can we just take a moment to appreciate their mugshots real quick?
Dude, they look inbred.
Look at these guys.
Those eyes.
Yeah.
They look like the when you randomly generate a character in Skyrim.
They're going to do real well in prison. God, it's even scarier to think these poor women.
Yeah.
These guys are so fucking heinous. Regardless of all the allegations and crimes, the criminal activity, including polygamy and incest within the Kingston clan, it's still going today as we speak. Prosecutors have called the Kingston clan a racketeering enterprise, hate group, corrupted polygamous cult. They also accuse leaders of sex trafficking in violation of federal and Utah law, sexual battery and abuse of a child, sexual battery and rape of an adult, negligent sexual battery and abuse of a child, infliction of emotional distress, and civil conspiracy. In January 2025, a lawsuit was filed by a former member alleging that Kingston leaders forced her when she was 16 years old into an incestuous relationship with her uncle as his third wife. The alleged victim, now 20, alleges she was trafficked as a child into an underage, incestuous, and bigamous order marriage. The following is all according to the lawsuit. Paul Eldon Kingston's brother married his daughter, with the daughter being only 14 at the time.
Yuck.
God. Their child was then made to choose one of her biological uncles to marry when she was 16. She chose her mother's brother because he was, quote, the youngest of these three uncles, born in 2001. How sick is that? Ah. The man's first wife was his cousin, his second wife was his cousin and niece, and his third wife was his niece. The girl was then taken, quote, in and out of Utah for marriage ceremonies. In February 2021, they took her to New Mexico, where an illegal ceremony was performed in the middle of a cold night on the side of a road in what she describes as the middle of nowhere for a secret order marriage. The following month, she was flown to Rhode Island to unlawfully obtain a marriage license and hold a ceremony. Then they dubiously relied on an antiquated Rhode Island law that an order attorney claimed allows marriage of kindred members of certain ancient Jewish sects, which I've never heard of that before.
No.
And then returning to Utah, the community held an extravagant ceremony, and during her marriage, the girl was, quote, sexually abused and occasionally raped by her uncle, becoming pregnant multiple times. She gave birth at 17 and also had a miscarriage later. I mean, just the amount of abuse this poor girl's gone through is just... it's just hard to even wrap your head around. It's just disgusting. At one point, blood testing and amniotic testing showed that one of the women's children would have birth defects, so Paul Eldon Kingston encouraged her to get an abortion and continue reproducing. As a grown woman, the lawsuit claims that she now, quote, realizes that the blood testing, grooming, coercion, marriage ceremony, sexual abuse, rapes, and amniotic testing she experienced took place for the intended purpose of impregnating her in an effort to lock her into the order and to provide things of value to defendants. This included her order marriage, children with pure Kingston blood, her labor for defendants and the order, the labor of her children, defendants' increased status, and standing within the order and by growing the order's population controlled wealth. So just sacrifice your entire...
everything.
Self.
Yeah.
Physical, mental, all of it. Because it's just, you're just treated like property. You're just like an animal.
Yeah.
That they're breeding.
Yeah, you're like livestock.
Yeah. Yeah. It's insane. This marriage was prohibited by Utah's third district court in 2023, and the woman was then granted an annulment. Both the lawsuits with the 10 women and the then 16-year-old girl are ongoing. Unfortunately, there has not been a criminal case strong enough to dismantle the Kingston clan, and they are still in operation to this day. But as we all are probably thinking and hope that with the growing allegations, the more members come out, the more members that come forward and talk, the more, you know, legal lawsuits and hopefully law enforcement eyes we can get on this, that maybe they will find, you know, that smoking gun to hopefully take down.
Yeah,
really, they need to take down the lead. Well, probably need to take down the whole thing, because I'm sure if the leaders go down, there's people ready to fill in and replace immediately.
Yeah, true.
So it's probably at the size they're at now, would be pretty difficult to take them down.
Yeah. I mean, the way that they're running like this, I don't know what else to call it other than like a breeding program that they have. I assume they already know their replacements, kind of almost.
Yes, there's an order.
Well, hierarchy, like the succession rules within this clan. They probably already know who's going to take over the throne, so to speak.
Well, it's like what the numbered system's for, too.
Yeah,
they'll have their numbers. Yeah. They have like, there's 1, 2, 3, 4 are going down the line. So then someone just pops in and fills a place.
God.
So it's like, I think really you got to be able to take away the resources, take away the money, take away the ability to control people, then maybe they don't follow. But I don't know. I think since it's really a big family, it's going to be pretty difficult to completely dismantle them. And then what happened? What's the fallout from that? Like you rip out the sort of the glue to this whole clan, then what's left?
Yeah.
And what do all these victims do after this? I mean, unless they get the money, but how does that even work? We don't even know where the money is.
Right.
Or what it is. It could just be a bunch of coins somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, script.
Yeah.
They've made up some credit line.
Yeah. Or it could be offshore somewhere. I mean, who knows where they've put their money?
Yeah, who knows?
This is just, I don't know. When I ran across it, I was like, this is just insane. Like, it's hard to even believe this is real.
Yeah, it seems like they're good at making themselves untouchable within the law somehow. So I don't know, you know, how much political power do they have, where they're operating? Have they paid people off? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, they have the money to have attorneys and everything else. So definitely have the finance. I mean, they're very, very wealthy.
Yeah.
At least the leaders are. So they can probably protect themselves pretty well from a legal perspective. But yeah, I mean, I feel like it's a group that we're going to hear about more and more as time goes on. And I think the more people defect from it, the more things we're going to hear about.
Yeah. Definitely.
And hopefully they eventually slip up somewhere and, you know, they're able to actually file criminal charges against the group. And
I figured that's what the feds were trying to get at with the raids that they've done through the years. But man, it seems like maybe they're just squeaky clean about their ongoings, mm-hmm. and what their finances and everything. They have it all squared away somehow, which is kind of mind blowing. But yeah, it's wild.
Well, it seems like Utah should just go after them. Technically, they're breaking the law.
Yeah.
But they don't. So what's going on there?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm curious if anybody is from Utah. What do you know about these guys? Maybe you are a current LDS member, former LDS member, or, you know, maybe you were even part of one of these other fundamentalist groups. I'm curious to know what you think. Do you think
Or if
just like pretty well known?
If you're a former Kingston member,
yeah.
Who knows if you're listening to this? Comment. How are they getting away with this? It makes no sense to me. I think it just has to do with the state of Utah kind of turning a blind eye.
It's got
to
be, yeah. Because, I mean, these elder Kingston clan guys don't seem to be very smart, but they clearly know how to hide their money and cover their crimes. But
I think one thing that's carrying them is their hatred for the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like that goes way back to kind of its inception. And they're just really good at navigating the loopholes, maybe.
Yeah, they got a couple good attorneys or something, you know, that understand case law and understand like the loopholes.
Yeah.
And where to put things.
Can I start getting paid in cash so I can just buy a bunch of gold bars, right? And hide them?
It's just buried in your closet.
Yeah.
Yeah. God. Yeah. IRS, if you're listening. That was a joke. Yeah, I'm curious, though, if anybody knows any more about the Kingston Clan, drop us a comment or a message wherever you're listening or watching. But yeah, hopefully you found this as intriguing as we did. I just wanted to dive into it more. And the more you get into it, the scarier it gets.
Yeah.
It and really the darker does. It gets. It's really, really grimy stuff. And, you know, if it's really, if you want to know more, definitely go. The Escaping Polygamy show is another great one to watch. Because there's a lot of episodes around the former members, including Amanda Ray and others from who defected from the Kingston group. And just really, they show they're trying to help other members get out and stuff, and just how difficult it is to leave the group. I mean, these guys are, there's neighborhoods where they're all living there watching each other, and they'll move family members that are, you know, acting up closer to the church or the leaders or other clan members so they can be watched. It's all very, yeah, there's no doubt this is a cult. There's just no doubt. And so there's a lot to learn from these members that have or ex-members who've defected. I think it's really brave for them to go out and be so outspoken about it and share their stories, because hopefully it encourages others to leave as well.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing that can potentially dismantle what's going on, is just more voices out there mm-hmm. who have defected.
But yeah, we're going to wrap up today. We will catch you guys next week with another one. We've got some... really
wild ones coming up. Yeah. Honestly, we have next week, I won't spoil anything, but it might be one of my most favorite topics and just research that I think I've ever gotten to do for this show.
Don't want to miss that one. Yeah. But we will see you guys next week. Till then, lights out, everybody.